imagine walking down the street with your child on a lot in Los Angeles and seeing a woman laying naked in a position that makes you think she's a mannequin, at first in a yard next to you. But this isn't a regular woman. She is chopped cleanly in half at the waist. That is what a woman walking her child saw on the morning of January 15th, 1947. Hello, and welcome to Murders, Mysteries, and the Paranormal. I am your host, Brian Watson, with my star co-host, Vittoria.
Hello.
Today, we're talking about the infamous case of Elizabeth Short, or, as the media dubbed her, the Black Dahlia. And I think this will be my longest episode yet.
So,
Should we go over
welcome.
what
I wanna
you.
hold on. Welcome to my podcast. Murder Mysteries, and I have my star co-host, Brian Watson, and we're gonna go into Elizabeth Short as we said. So,
Should we start off with what we previously know about this case?
Yeah, I'll start, but mine's short. I really don't know much about this case, at all. I'm going blind into this one.
I've done a lot of research for this episode. I've even went to the FBI's official site.
Yeah.
And I have three PDFs that are like each 40 pages long from the FBI about their papers during when the case was going on.
Yeah, so I might be going like, oh my gosh, or like so surprised about some of these things because I have never really researched on this case. I know there's like, I've watched a lot of like old news like reports on it and stuff, but not much.
Not any of the newer documentaries.
I don't know much at all.
Okay, so
So
let's get started.
let's get started. And I'm just gonna start off. So, as Wikipedia states, Elizabeth Short was born on July 29th, 1924, in Hyde Park section of Boston, Massachusetts, the third of five daughters of Cleo A. Short and wife Phoebe May Sawyer. End quote. The family briefly moved to Portland, Maine, before settling in Medford, a small suburb of Boston, within the year 1927. Cleo Elizabeth's father built miniature golf courses until he lost his savings in the stock market crash of 1929. In 1930, his car was found abandoned at the Charleston Bridge, and it was assumed that he had jumped off the bridge and ended his own life. Phoebe, believing her husband dead, she began working as a bookkeeper to support her family.
Elizabeth was troubled.
Damn.
Elizabeth was troubled by bronchitis and severe asthma
Oh.
attacks. She underwent lung surgery at the age of 15, our age,
Oh my gosh.
which her doctors highly recommended she re regularly re relocate to a milder climate to prevent further respiratory issues. Phoebe sent her to spend winters in Miami, Florida, with some daily friends for 3 years. In Elizabeth's sophomore year, she dropped out of Medford High School.
I'm not dropping out,
No.
but this is actually a pretty sad story already. Like,
Oh, no. It gets better.
oh, okay, yeah, I love you, but
Oh,
okay.
no.
Continuing. In 1942, Elizabeth's mother received a letter of apology from her presumed dead husband, which revealed that he was in fact alive and well. Bitch, what? Alive and well? Who in the hell? He just started a new life in California? What? Continuing, he had started a new life in California in December of that same year at the age of 18. Elizabeth relocated to Vallejo, California. Is that how you say it?
Vallejo.
Vallejo, California, to live with her father, and she hasn't seen him since she was 6 years old. I couldn't. I couldn't. Nope. Cleo was working at the nearby Mare Island Naval Shipyard on the San Francisco Bay. Arguments between Elizabeth and her father caused her to move out in January of 1943. So the question is, was it her father?
Given she moved over there
And they got in a
and they got in some
fight.
fights, probably, but she
We'll
believed it and she would have moved back before
Oh,
during
okay.
because...
But still, like...
She lived with him for about a year.
He's obviously, like, a pretty secretive guy, though.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he's pretty, like, if he somehow figured out how to disappear slash fake his own death and start a new life, who knows what else he could do.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on.
Elizabeth took a job at the base of Camp Cook, now Vandenberg Air Force Base, near Lampoc. As the Wikipedia article states, briefly living with a U.S. Army Air Force sergeant who reported abusing her, she left Lampoc in mid-1943 and moved to Santa Barbara, where she was arrested on September 23rd, 1943, for drinking at a bar underage. End quote. The authorities sent Elizabeth back to Massachusetts, but she returned to Florida, making occasional visits to her family near Boston.
Oh my. There are a lot of suspects in this case, obviously. Like, she's out of life.
I have an entire... The last, like, two... No, not two pages. Because the script we're reading this off of is, like, 3 pages long.
This is only the
last
first
page. Is literally just her autopsy.
Just her autopsy?
Just her autopsy and subjects.
I
want
to read the autopsy. I want to. So bad.
It goes into really... I just copied and pasted it from Wikipedia because at that point I was done. Because I was also handwriting it out. So,
yeah.
We love this.
When you handwrite a script and it's 3 pages long, you...
No. When I was handwriting it, it was like 10 pages long.
Oh, damn.
And just typing it, it's the way I write. But just typing it, it got condensed down to 3 pages.
Mmm. Okay. But. So originally, by handwritten, it was 10 pages.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or more.
Let's move on. Oh no! Here comes another one. while Elizabeth was in Florida, she met Major Matthew Michael Jordan Jr.
It's Gordon.
Gordon?
It'd be a J if it was Jordan.
Oh, yeah, sorry. She met Major Matthew Michael Gordon Jr., a decorated Army Air Force officer of the 2nd Air Commando Group, who was training for
deployment
to the Southeast Asian Theater as blah, 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 artandculture.google.com states. Oh, as www.artsandculture.google.com states, the, quote, the Southeast Asia Theater of World War II consisted of the campaigns of the Pacific War in Burma, India, Thailand, the Philippines, Indochina, Malaya.
I think that's supposed to be Malaysia, I think.
Malaysia and Singapore. Japan attacked British and American territories with near simultaneous offenses against Southeast Asia and the Central Pacific on 7-8 December 1941, end quote. She later told her friends that he had written a purpose marriage while he was recovering.
He'd written to propose.
Oh, okay, sorry. She later told friends that he had written
to propose marriage
while he was recovering from a plane crash in India. She accepted his marriage proposal, but Gordon died in a second plane crash on August 10th, 1945, less than a week before the end of the war. Wow, life's hard, man. For this girl, she's gone through some stuff. And then she gets killed on top of it. Oh, I would be... You know what?
Well, as you said, her life was even... As you said, with a separate case, that really aggravates you. Her life was worse.
Even before
her head was chopped off, boiled, and then stuffed inside of an oversized Hello Kitty doll.
Yeah, that was another episode. So if you want to go check out my Hello Kitty episode, go for it. Because that one is intense and it takes place in Tokyo, I think.
Hong Kong.
Or...
It's Hong Kong.
Yeah, it's Hong Kong. Anyway, moving on.
In July of 1946, Elizabeth moved to Los Angeles to visit an Army Air Force Lieutenant, Joseph Gordon.
Okay, hold on. Let's pause for a second. What in the heck is with her and these, like, Army guys?
I don't know. It's an issue.
And they move away? Like, what is with her and the Army guys? Like,
they either move away or die.
Like, does she have a thing for these Army guys? Or, like,
What is it? It could be, like, you and having a thing for guys with darker skin tones.
Oh, shut up. No, we don't talk about that. That was, like,
anyways.
Nothing. Anyway.
An acquaintance from Florida who was stationed at the Naval Reserve Air Base in Long Beach, Elizabeth spent the last 6 months of her life
in Southern California.
Mostly the area of Los Angeles. Died.
No, it's going. Oh. It'll keep recording. Okay, it's sorry.
Weird.
Now they're off.
Shortly before she died, she had been working as a waitress was renting a room behind the Florentine Gardeners nightclub on Hollywood Boulevard.
Okay, isn't this, like, the epitome of any murder? Like, living in a sketchy part of town, and then also being a waitress. Like, this is the epitome of every murder almost ever.
Yeah. She had been described and depicted as an aspiring or would-be actress. According to some sources, she had aspirations to be a film star, though she had no known acting jobs or credits.
Oh. Now, let's talk about her murder, or shortly before her murder, exactly. As Wikipedia states, quote, on January 4th, 1947, shortly returned to her...
It should be short. It autocorrect is dumb.
Okay, sorry.
That's the reason it's not nice.
Short returned to her home in Los Angeles after a brief trip to San Diego with Robert Redd, mainly a 25-year-old married salesman she had been dating.
Affair
much? Oh!
She's the side piece.
And now it's a salesman? Oh, my. Mm-hmm. Oh, it was the jealous. I don't know.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe.
Manley stated that he dropped her off at the Biltmore Hotel in downtown Los Angeles.
And that Short was to meet her sister.
Who was visiting from Boston that afternoon. By some accounts, staff of the Biltmore recall having seen Short using the lobby telephone shortly after she was allegedly seen at the Crown Grill Cocktail Lounge at 754 South Olive Street, approximately 3/8 mile away from the Biltmore, end quote. She was also allegedly seen at the same time as she was at the Crown Grill at the Cecil Hotel.
Which I discussed in my third episode.
What?
All about the Cecil
Hotel. What? Now we're getting into haunted hotels? Oh, this girl
Well, no, the Biltmore is supposedly severely haunted by her ghost.
The Cecil is.
The Biltmore, I think, is supposedly haunted by her ghost. And people can see her using the telephone.
So where in the heck was she actually?
She was at the Biltmore.
For sure, though. Like, other accounts say she was at the Cecil, so.
But it's been proven that she was actually at the Biltmore.
Okay. She was actually at the Crown Grill at the time, not the Cecil Hotel, which is discussed in my third episode, all about the Cecil Hotel.
Now let's talk about the discovery of the body.
Oh, hell.
I'm getting this information from the FBI's public record on Elizabeth Short, and I would like Victoria to read this as the article, and I'd like you to read this, because I think you would love reading this out loud.
Okay. As the article states... On the morning of January 15th, 1947, a mother taking a walk in a Los Angeles neighborhood stumbled upon a gruesome sight. The body of a young, naked woman sliced clean in half at the waist. The body was just a few feet from the sidewalk and posed in such a way that the mother reportedly thought it was a mannequin at first glance. Despite the extensive mutilation and cuts on the body, there wasn't a drop of blood at the scene, indicating that the young woman was killed elsewhere. Obviously. The ensuing investigation was led by the LA Police Department. The FBI was asked to help, and it quickly identified the body. 56 minutes, in fact, after getting blurred fingerprints via sound photo, a primitive fax machine used by news services from Los Angeles, the young woman turned out to be a 22-year-old Hollywood hopeful named Elizabeth Short, later dubbed the Black Dahlia by the press for her rumored penchant for sheer black clothes and for the Black Dahlia movie out at the time. Short's prints actually appeared twice in the FBI's massive prints collection. More than 100 million were on file at this time. First, she applied for a job as a clerk at the
commissary
of the Army's camp Cook in California in January 1943. Second, she had been arrested by the Santa Barbara police for underage drinking 7 months earlier. The Bureau also had her mugshot in its files and provided it to the press. In support of the LA police, the FBI ran records checks on potential suspects and conducted interviews across the nation. Based on the early suspicions that the murderer may have the skills in dissection because the body was so cleanly cut, agents were also asked to check out a group of students at the University of Southern California Medical School. And in a tantalizing potential break in the case, the Bureau searched for a match to fingerprints found on an anonymous letter that may have been sent to the authorities by the killer. But the prints weren't in the FBI's file. End quote. Hold up.
Everything that the FBI has on their very skimpy front page bit for their famous cases.
Okay, well, this case is... So... I'm gonna cry.
We're not done.
Actually, this was a pretty short episode.
For now. Now let's move on. Now let's move on to her autopsy. The Wikipedia article states, quote, "An autopsy for Short's body was performed on January 16th, 1947 by Frederick Newbar.
This guy must be in with it.
The Los Angeles County Coroner. Newbar's autopsy report stated that Elizabeth Short was 5 feet 5 inches tall, or
1.65 meters tall.
Weighed 115 pounds, or 52 kilograms, and had light blue eyes, brown hair, and badly decayed teeth. There were ligature marks on her ankles, wrist, and neck, and an irregular laceration of superficial tissue loss on her right breast.
So usually that indicates that she was strangled or tied up.
Yes.
When they have lacerations.
Newbar also noted superficial lacerations on the right upper forearm, on the right forearm, left upper arm, and lower left side of the chest. The body had been cut completely in half by a technique taught in the 1930s called a hemicorporectomy. The lower half of her body had been removed by transecting the lumbar spine between the second and third lumbar vertebrae, thus severing the intestine and the duodenum. Newbar's report noted very little bruising along the incision line, suggesting it had been performed after death. Another gaping laceration measured 4.4 1/4 inches, or 110 millimeters, in length ran longitudinally from the umbilicus of the suprarrhabdic region. The lacerations on each side of the face, which extended from the corners of the lips, which were measured at 3 inches. Or 75 millimeters on the right side of her face, and 2.5 inches, or 65 millimeters on the left. The skull was not fractured, but there was bruising noted on the front and right side of her scalp. With a small amount of bleeding in the subarachnoid side of space on the right side, consistent with the blows to her head. The cause of death was determined to be hemorrhaging from the lacerations on her face and the shock from blows to the head and face. Newbar reported that Short's anal canal was dilated at 1 3/4 inches, or 45 millimeters, suggesting she might have been raped. Samples were taken from her body testing for her presence of sperm, but the results came back negative.
Okay, so
now we are on to, that was the autopsy. Now we are on after the autopsy, I believe.
Okay, well, let's go back like 2 steps for a second talk about this. So, basically what I'm hearing was she could possibly have been raped. Her body was cleaned after it was cut up and beat to death. It wasn't because she didn't have any brain damage, which is weird if she died by the hits.
Blows to her head.
By the blows to her head. And like, okay, yeah. This whole autopsy is a little sketchy. Everything.
Yeah, I shortened everything. It a lot.
Everything was a big autopsy. About everything is a little sketchy. This whole case is sketchy. Mm-hmm. Sketch. And she was, like, you know how many people she must have known? Like, she knew people around the world. Like, how the hell? How are they supposed to find this person? Oh, wait, that's right. They never did.
Yeah. Since you're upset, I'll continue reading. Immediately following Short's identification, reporters from William Randolph Hearst's Los Angeles Examiner contacted her mother, Phoebe Short, in Boston, and told her that her daughter had won a beauty contest. It was only after prying as much personal information as they could from Phoebe, the reporters revealed her daughter had been, in fact, murdered.
Yes.
The newspaper offered to pay her airfare and accommodations if she would travel to Los Angeles to help with the police investigation. That was yet another ploy, since the newspaper kept her away from the police and reporters to protect its scoop. The Examiner and another Hearst newspapers, the Los Angeles Herald Express, later sensationalized the case with one article from the Examiner describing a black tailored suit Short was last seen wearing as a tight skirt and a sheer blouse. The media nicknamed her the Black Dahlia and was described her as an adventuress who prowled Hollywood Boulevard. The additional newspaper reports, such as one in the Los Angeles Times on January 17th, deemed her as the murderer as a sex fiend slaying. By the spring of 1947...
I'm done. My turn. Okay. By the spring of 1947, Short's murder had become a cold case with few new leads. Sergeant Finnis Brown, one of the lead detectives on the case, blamed the press for compromising the investigation through reporters' probing of details and unverified reporting. In September 1949, a grand jury convened to discuss inadequacies in the LAPD's homicide unit based on their failure to solve numerous murders, especially those of women and children. Ah! Corruption!
Oh, well, yeah, we knew this. It was back in the 40s. They were literally paid off.
Yeah. In the past several years, Shorts being one of them, in the aftermath of the grand jury, further investigation was done on Shorts' past, with detectives tracing her movements between Massachusetts, California, and Florida, and also interviewed people who knew her in Texas and New Orleans. However, the interviews yielded no useful information in the murder. This pisses me off. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. I'm
reading. Oh, this is the last bit.
I'm holy shit ho. Okay, I'm reading. I'm gonna read this one because this one's a little bit intense. There had been over 500 confessions over the years.
Mm-hmm.
There had been many suspects over the years. Some of them more notable ones are: a doctor named Walter Bailey, proposed by the former Times copy editor Larry Harnish, Times publisher Norman Chandler, who biographer Donald Wolfe claims impregnated Short, Leslie Dillon Joseph, a Dumas Artie Lane, a.k.a. Jeff Connors, Mark Henson, Dr. Francis E. Sweeney, Woody Guthrie, Bugsy Siegel, Orson Welles, George Hodel's friend Fred Sexton, George Knowlton, Robert M. Red Manley, Patrick S. O'Reilly, and Jack Anderson Wilson. Okay, why is not one of the suspects her father? Did they just...
He wasn't in the area at the time. It's like saying Phoebe killed
her. Well, but that's my whole point, though, is they don't actually really know that. There might not be traces of it, but that doesn't mean that's not where he was, because I'm sorry, but if he got away with killing himself... If he,
Yeah.
And then they got in a fight. What was this fight about?
I forget his name. I think it's... It's either Hodel or Walter Bailey. But I think it's
There's George Hodel.
I think it's Hodel. I think George Hodel. His son. It's either his son or doctor. The doctor named Walter Bailey. One of the two. One of their
sons.
Their son says, "My father did it. I saw her at my dad's house." And because he had the secret room. Yeah, I
think it's Walter Bailey. But that's like every murder ever.
He has a secret room where he, one, kept multiple ladies. And then the guy also raped his daughter. Or daughters.
Holy hell. Well, I think it's like Walter Bailey, for sure.
Yeah.
Because he just seemed like, one, he's a doctor. Clean cuts.
He knows what to do. Two, he was around when being instructed in 1930.
Yeah, he knows how to get away with it because he's probably seen dead bodies and how they autopsy them.
Well, that, and he's also performed on them because that's what they would do is they'd use donated bodies as testing dummies.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And the doctor's kind of sus, but you know, it's actually... Are you cold?
Yes, I'm freezing.
Yeah, me too.
He's freezing.
It's not especially a very... Sick. This case is...
Ugh.
It's hard.
It just annoys you.
Because they decided not to solve it. So, and then they blamed it on the news. I'm sorry, but the news didn't corrupt the case. It was the police.
Well, it was both sides.
It was all the sides, actually. It was also herself. She corrupt the case. It was her fault. I'm just kidding. Don't
come at her, okay?
I'm just kidding. It was a joke. But this case has never been solved, and it probably never will be.
Like the Zodiac killer.
Actually, that one I think might be solved.
It's coming close because they're finally just being able to, quote-unquote, decipher the B3.
We'll never actually know.
But we'll never
know. Never actually know, because we don't, like, it was his own, like, language. We will never know if it's Zodiac killer.
If it's what he actually meant within the letter, or that's just one possible meaning.
That's just one possible thing.
Yeah. Love it.
Love it. So, yeah, that was today's episode. We're getting around 30 minutes. I think we're going to keep talking until we get to that point.
Yeah.
Because then it'll be a nice little episode.
My next case that I'm already doing a bit of research for is the Casey Lynn McDaniel disappearance. But, yeah. What's your next case going to be? Your next thing going to be on?
My next thing, I'm starting cryptids so late. Like, I know I said a while ago.
You said it, like, a few months ago that, oh, yeah, I'm going to do my next season on cryptids. And yet, here we are recording a Black Dahlia one.
Well, yeah, because I have...
Season one's not officially over.
I have the scripts of my first two cryptids done, but I need to get my laptop and get on it. And
just kind of get it done. But yeah, you just don't have the time.
I don't have time right now. And when Brian already has this case open, I'm like, oh, I'll record it with you. Blah, 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 blah. I'll do it. Yeah. And we've put this one on back for a while.
It's been on the back burner since, what, August?
Mm, yeah.
And it's October, so that's like 2 months.
Yeah, it's been a couple months. And then, my first two episodes... I'm going to start with cryptids, and my first episode is, I think it's Bigfoot. And then I'm going into the Sally House. So if you guys want to be there for those episodes.
Yeah, cryptids and the paranormal.
Yeah,
This is what season two is.
I'm doing cryptids and paranormal because paranormal is crap a lot.
Well, the thing is, the paranormal is always considered just ghosts when it isn't. It's actually a wider spectrum.
Yeah, no, paranormal.
Paranormal has the ghosties and demons. Yeah, it means more than normal.
Yeah,
literally
more than normal. So it could be aliens. It could be any like cryptids.
Yeah.
Cryptids are paranormal.
Alien. Yeah, but most people just glaze over that fact.
That paranormal's ghosts and scary. No, it's not
scary. Demon creatures coming for your soul in the middle of night to possess you. We're looking at you. It's not the Sally House, Conjuring House.
Amityville Horror.
The DeFeo murder. We shouldn't laugh at this. This is a very serious subject.
Have you met us, Brian?
The thing is, the other day, I was listening to... This was a few months ago. But I was listening to an episode of Crime Junkies. Love them. They're the best. And they're one of the best. I can't say that because I have many other favorites.
Yeah,
but
me too.
This case... The mother was lying in the bed naked.
Oh, damn.
Dead.
Damn.
The daughter, 7 years old.
Damn.
Laying face down, facing out the door like she was running out.
Oh.
Face down, puddle of her own blood.
Oh, damn it.
And what do I do? I'm like, I'm hungry. I'm going to go grab some club crackers.
Oh, yeah, I do that all the time. Is I like, and while I'm listening to like, the podcast.
How can you do that? I'm like, but it's not that hard.
I listened to this one recently where, like, the boy went in and killed, like, his whole family, but he tried to keep it as a lie because he was staying over at a friend's house, and he did it because his because his mom didn't want him over at his friend's, but he went and stayed there overnight, and then, like, and then he was supposed to clean the house and watch his sister. Instead, he killed his whole family during the night, and he just told his friends he wanted to go get the car, and I was, like, eating ramen.
And
like, I was listening, like, the dad was shot, he was sitting on the couch, yeah.
Oh my god. I know so many cases.
Yeah,
no. I'm like, no, literally, I could be watching something about somebody who got, I don't know, let's say she had her face severely mutilated, she was raped, and it just going into the deep, deep, gory details.
Oh, I'm Hello like, Kitty murder, I was eating hot dogs. And Jason.
And Subway.
Yeah, oh no, it was Subway. Jason told me. Jason was like, please don't talk about a head being boiled while I'm eating, because he was eating too. And I was like, okay, I'll pause the episode. And then I waited till he was done eating, and I kept going.
And they were it's like the Hello Kitty murder though, because they were using the same utensils to cook her body as they were using to cook their food.
Mm-hmm. Which is gross.
Most people, I know you're watching
this. That almost reminds me of Andrew Jackson.
The noses.
The noses. No. And then nibbles on the thigh.
She might have sampled some thigh. We don't know. It's a possibility.
And then the noses were because he killed all these people in a bunch of different cabins and he wanted to count how many people he killed.
They were the Indians. Because they had the war going on. The two Indian tribes were fighting in cabins.
Yes.
They were in their places and he went and shot them.
And it was just the one group, and then he went and chased the red flag group, which was the other group, and they
surrendered and were trying to get away. And he's like, and as Davy Crockett says, yes, that was a real person. Not just this TV show.
Yeah, Davy Crockett is a real person, guys.
I didn't know that. But as I was watching Bailey Sarian's episode about this, episode number 4, Andrew Jackson, she gets onto the Trail of Tears, because she goes over the stuff before the fucked up shit that he did in his presidency.
Oh, his presidency.
He was just as bad before. And then, what does my history teacher do? Skip over the juicy parts.
Skip over all the juicy parts. Like, we were going over the stuff, and we're like, hey, we're doing this one because we know all the juicy stuff. Like, you skipped all the juicy stuff, man.
And he's like, well, we don't have enough time.
And then I told my table about about all the juicy stuff, and they're like, he ate people? He cut off noses?
He took a baby.
He took a baby and kept it as his own.
He's like, oh,
an Indian baby?
It was an Indian baby.
And he named it Sacagawea.
No, it was Sequoia.
Sequoia. Yeah, not Sequoia.
He gave it to his married wife.
To his already married wife. Like,
well, no, she got divorced a year after she married Andrew Jackson.
Well, no,
but
she was
married. But she was married before Andrew.
Uh-huh, which
now we're just venting. Oh, I know what to title this episode. The Black Dahlia Murder. And plus venting.
And plus some, though, venting like, ugh. Anyway, I'm excited. Sam and Colby are coming out with Hell Week.
Oh, they are. I never watch them. Ever.
Well, you're going to watch Hell Week with me. It's a whole week. Every single day they post a new episode.
Isn't Selena going to be there?
Yes. Selena, Chris, all the good ones are going to be
Chris.
There.
Chris. What's her bucket? I think her name's Kat.
Yeah, Kat. Katrina.
You love.
Of them are going to be there. My favorite, what's the mind ones where they can see the ghost?
It's not the Estes.
No. The people who can do it.
Like Selena, the home reader. That's what she calls herself.
No, not like a home reader. Like
psychics?
Yeah, like a psychic.
Well, Selena's technically a psychic.
Yeah, I know.
Because she's clairvoyant.
My favorite my favorite sidekick is going in.
Who?
I don't know her name.
It's not Cindy Kazar.
No, she's blonde, and she only goes in Sam and Colby episodes.
Okay.
And then she runs her own business. I think I've seen her
once or twice.
Yep. I love her. So go check out Sam and Colby. Go check out
Bailey Sarian.
Yep.
And Crime Junkie.
And Crime Junkie. Oh, also, I want you guys to check out
our new podcast that we're doing called Trauma Troop. We are going to be hopefully uploading an episode this next week,
yep.
But we don't know. It's just a possibility.
It's going to be called Trauma Troop. We already have it kind of set up, but we haven't
recorded any episodes.
But hopefully in this next week we will. And then also I want you guys to go check out one of my favorite podcasters. Let's see here. I can't remember the name, even though I love them. Morbid. They are Morbid is great.
Yeah.
And go check out Morbid.
Yeah. To go on with more on Bailey Searing, because she's got two podcasts. Well, Selena has a podcast too. I'm just going to rant off podcasts that I love now.
Yeah.
So we'll go start off with Bailey Searing. Bailey Searing has two podcasts. One is Dark History, where she's on season two now. And her latest episode was about clowns. And
Kenzie needs to listen.
Kenzie will flip.
But
she talks about the dark, deep history goss. And then she has her other, which doubles as her YouTube series, Murder, Mystery, and Makeup. She doesn't do the theme song anymore, but that's because she's starting a new chapter of her life, and that's part of her old chapter ever since her and her fiancé broke up.
Yeah! And the other one that I really, really want you guys to go check out is Morbid. Morbid, it's two amazing girls who just go over a bunch of murders, and they're what inspired me to start a podcast, because I absolutely enjoy their episodes. They're about an hour long, and I love their listener tales. They're when people send their own stories, and then they pick a few and read them.
That is a literal segue into my next topic.
And it's so...
Selena Spooky Boo.
It's so cool.
Selena's got her podcast as well, The Haunted Estate, where basically it's just a vent podcast. But she started it back in, I believe, 2014. And then she had to stop doing her podcast, I think, in 2016.
Yeah,
2016, 2017. Because she had to stop because there was this stalker dude. Because she used to have this.
Oh, yeah, uh-huh.
Because she used to have this toll-free number that you call to send in your stories. Old episodes, they're lovely. I started off with those. I haven't watched all of them. There was like 100. And I'm just like, damn. But she rebooted it in 2018. She did a reboot, redid it. She's doing more episodes that are coming out weekly. She has Adam, her husband. She's got Joel. She has her new assistant on there. The episode before her most recent one, she had Chris on there. And then her second episode.
I love how all of our favorite
people. Her second episode, know each other.
All know each other, uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And then we have my bestie. I don't know her personally, but Loey Lane. Toria knows about Loey.
Mm-hmm.
And she and her best friends, Eleanor, otherwise more famously known as Snitchery. Mm-hmm. I showed you Snitchery. Mm-hmm. She's pretty dope. She's pretty and hurt, but she also released a new makeup thing. I haven't done it. I'm broke. Can't do that. But they talk about internet urban legends. So they've talked about most of the most well-known internet urban legends.
Mm-hmm.
Like Blank Room Soup, Mallow, the Michigan, Lake Michigan, It's Triangle.
Oh, uh-huh.
They talk about just internet urban legends. And you get addicted to them.
There's this one that, freaking...
We're just talking about podcasts for 10 minutes now. I love
them. On our podcast.
20 minutes now. It's perfect. It makes me be able to go, hey, This is technically going to be my longest episode.
On Morbid, they released one of my favorite episodes now. It's about this lake that, I can't remember what they called it.
It's not like Ontario. Which lake is it that doesn't give up their dead?
No, it's like somewhere in the... It's somewhere like... It's a lake that nobody knows about, basically. But people go down there and visit because there was this guy that lived there and his son that moved down there. There's a dark history. Like, he thought he saw a girl floating on the water and then... And then the next day he didn't see her, but he saw the doll. A doll floating in the same spot. And then he put it on a tree and saved it.
That's
And then
the Doll Island. Isn't it the Doll Island?
No.
Because that's the same storyline.
I don't know.
That seems the same storyline. Then the guy eventually dies.
Hold on. Yeah, and his son takes over.
Yeah, his son takes over and he's collecting dolls in his honor. It has to be the Doll Island.
I'm looking. Chill. Ooh. Wait, where was I? I think it's this one.
It have to be.
Uh-huh. It's, okay, so it's this one about,
Doll Island in Mexico.
It's about spooky woods, and their episode is episode 370, and it's about spooky woods, but they bring into a lake, and let me see... Yep, the Island of Dolls, you're right.
Knew it.
The Island of Dolls.
Two sentences and I'm gonna get to the Island of the Dolls.
Yeah, Island of Dolls, and it has a dark ass history. It's like
that
scary.
That was one of the first, but Selena, we're bouncing between topics here, mm-hmm. and we love it. But Selena, she has her gift, mm-hmm. she calls it. She didn't want to classify herself as a psychic mm-hmm. because that would bring too much attention.
Mm-hmm.
So she called herself the Home Raider.
Mm-hmm.
She did this for free.
Oh, and then she got out of it because something weird.
Then she
weird
got out
shit.
Of it because she's seen so many dark things
mm-hmm.
and they tend to follow her.
Oh, welcome to my world.
Well, no, as in she had, I guess, a previous attachment maybe. Or something. I need to re-listen to the episode where she talks about it. And then she goes and writes... A story.
Mm-hmm.
An entire book. She releases so many books. I want to read it.
What's that called?
It's called The Home Reader.
Oh, yeah. I should have known that.
And
anyway.
Yeah.
I think we should.
We should end it.
We should back this up.
42
we have,
minutes
Yeah,
long.
We have to leave. Like, guys, we gotta go. We got places to be. No, I'm just kidding.
But.
We
if
literally
you're hearing
do,
this from, like, Casper, Glen Rock, Douglas, any areas near Glen Rock, Wyoming. Tomorrow, from the day this will be posted, the 15th of October, we are performing our Peter and Wendy play.
Oh!
The play itself starts at 6:30. There is no cost but to watch the play. But if you have littles, 6th grade and under, you can come and do the carnival. I forget the prizes, but if you check out my Instagram, which I will have linked in the bio, you will be able to see from my latest post, about the prices and the posters and such about our Peter and Wendy play in Drama Carnival.
Mm-hmm. Peter and Wendy is like, it's kind of an off. It's more for the little kids, but it's definitely a British.
It's very British.
It's very British, so we kind of like, but
we
there's
had to
a lot of,
stuff.
We love acting and we love seeing y'all come out, so please come out. And then later in the year, I think around our Christmas time.
About Christmas time, about, we will be performing
we will
the
be,
House of Usher.
Performing Follow the House of Usher, and me, I'm the Madeline, the one who dies. We know. And I'm super excited to perform that play. That one's for more of you,
Adults.
Adults who like scarier, morbid things like us.
It's an Edgar Allan play, short story, turned into a screenwrite.
Uh-huh. And I am super excited to be performing for everybody, so I hope y'all come out and see. Brian's gonna be running Korean's as always.
Per usual. I'm backstage manager.
Mm-hmm. And he does a little bit with acting.
During the spring. During the spring play.
Because we have one spring play, we do a dinner theater at our school.
We started this last year.
Yeah, we started this last year, and Brian acted, and we loved Brian acting. So,
I hate acting, though.
So,
sucks.
We asked Brian to be in every spring play from now on.
It'll be a tradition.
And, yeah. And he's okay with that as long as he's not in the actual
I'm
plays
not in a major
on the stage.
Role.
And Ugh. He will not be on a major role.
Thank
so.
God. I hate being a major role.
So, yeah, if you guys want to come see us, just
come bop down to the GIS auditorium. So if you go on the I-25 and go to Glen Rock and go through the west exit.
It doesn't really matter which exit you go through. Just go through one of the exits.
So if you're if you know where the cemetery is, go by there.
Mm-hmm. You'll find the middle school eventually. It's not very far down the road.
No, it's on 4th Street. So,
South 4th. Yeah, middle school, Glen Rock, Wyoming, GIS, you'll find it. Just look it up on Google Maps, damn.
You'll find us eventually.
Yeah.
And you might be able to meet us.
Yeah, you might be able to meet us, but I might be in my costume, so you might not notice me. Plus, you can't see me, so you don't
know. You're a lost boy, Toria.
Shh, they don't need to know that.
You're so not gonna be seen.
But nobody's gonna, like...
Me, on the other hand, you won't see me during the play.
The carnival. If you want to see Brian come to the carnival, you'll know when you see him. Based off of his voice. But you guys just hear our voices. Our voices.
Yeah.
Our voices, so you might not be able to choose us, pick and choose us out. Goodbye. We love you.
Mm-hmm.
See you next time on our podcasts.
Stay safe and don't do anything fucking dumb.
Don't be like Black Dahlia, Andrew Jackson, any of the people we talked about, except for our favorite podcasters. Thank you and goodbye. Au revoir.